Can I say it all again? But I am going to anyway. You know, we had a false start, everyone. It was our dress rehearsal, but
yeah.
Welcome to the Gundam Explained show live. I'm your host, Adam Blue. Joining me is Steven. Earlier, we had Sam, the cat.
Oh, I'm sure he'll be back up here in a minute.
I guess you realized, okay, it's for real now.
which is hilarious because it's like we were talking for about 6 minutes and you know he was just
chilling. But I remembered what I talked about, so it'd be good. There we go. Yeah, Ultronimus started without stream being on again. You know, life of a streamer. No, but it's weird because the show is earlier than normal. Yes. That's one thing, and you know, thankfully Steven's helping me out here. I'm seeing Sonic 3 later tonight with the family. Totally forgot Thursdays is when we stream in the evening, so
dude, I'm jealous that you're getting to see it today. I gotta pick out a time to take my daughter to see it. So
that's cool. And yeah, I'm sure she'll like that. I mean, that's a kid thing. Like, even though as an adult, I like Sonic. Like, but that's interesting because, and I'm glad we have new content now that we started over. Because, real quick, when I was a kid, the reason I liked Sonic was because how cool he came off. It wasn't like that. It was a cutesy character. You know, it was just he was cool, you know, and I it's kind
of
interesting.
Are you the one that wrote the letter that said it would be cool if Sonic had a gun?
No. So that whole thing with Shadow was crazy. That came out of nowhere. Anyway, yeah, so we're doing this a little earlier for today. And yeah, Christmas is next week, actually. It would be on your, yeah, the day you stream. We even were talking about if we're going to do something or not. I'm open. Yeah. To what you decide. I guess this would be the last stream before Christmas. So, but I want to cover what I was just covering before the false start. But this is like the first time we're back at bantering verse. Last week we had the 2 days of the Year in Gundam 2024.
Yeah.
One on your channel, one on mine with the coach, Xionic Shadow. That was a lot of fun. This will allow us to, you know, banter a little bit more today. We were talking about that. Yes, I even didn't have really time to talk much about Anime Frontier, although I do have videos up, the interview with Justin, the Gundam base. You were bringing up how you liked in the interview how down to earth he was and like how he was just like for someone to work at Bandai Namco that's into that stuff.
Because we always talk about it like as fans, you know, we're like, oh man, these corporate guys, they don't know what they're talking about. It's like, no. Like Justin, you know, he's working marketing for Bandai Namco Collectibles. And like, he cares about this stuff. He loves the franchises. He loves the toys and everything. So it would be like if one of us got the job, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, that's a good thing to bring up because it's interesting when I first got into Gundam, I would follow the Bandai Collect YouTube and he would do these lives with the other guys sometimes. And I remember one time I won like a little Lego Pac-Man thing just by putting in a comment. But it's interesting to see how long he's been there, which, you know, I guess that depends, but how he's always had this kind of positive attitude. He's very well spoken. So if you haven't checked out that interview with Justin, check it out. It's really cool to see who's behind, you know, the kind of the American marketing for all that stuff. Those videos were from last week. This week, I had the video up where it was kind of a deeper dive with some of our supporters. That we had a G-Watch Monday. So Ian and Ashley, we talked about the things that came out in 2024. What's cool is I'm a huge Requiem for Vengeance stand, their huge Freedom stands. And so I think it was kind of cool that we kind of met up that way because they're really able to talk about their love of the Seed stuff, which I'm not into as much, although I'm getting more into that and we'll talk about that in a second. and then the other video I dropped yesterday was they came out with the new arena mode in the Silver Phantom VR. Now, this is interesting, Steven, because my main criticism of the game in my review was there's no mode where you're in a mobile suit. That seems like the most obvious thing to do. And here we are. They updated it. And I will say it seems like it was a quick afterthought because they pretty much, it's so simple.
It's so funny because it's like, wait a second. You mean to tell me that in all the time R&D with this product, like it never occurred to you that this is what people would actually want to do?
Yeah, I know. That's what's interesting. And so I could tell it was an afterthought. And maybe you can if you guys watch the video, because it's really just the sequences from the Silver Phantom story where you're in the mobile suit and it's where you attack like that. That's not fun, but one, it's cool that they made that update in the first place. Like when developers will do that with their games, add things, I like that.
Yeah,
because that could have easily been a $4.99 mode, but no, it was free. Also, what's kind of neat about it is when you're in the menu before you start, you're actually in the cockpit, so you can like look around while you're in there. And I even noticed when I was watching the video, it cuts off a lot of the top and bottom that you would actually see if you were in the VR. I think there's a way if you record through the VR, which I did it as a stream share onto a browser. But if you record in the VR, and I think some of my videos have shown it, it's a like a square to kind of different. It's like the Zack Snyder style. No, but it's, you know, I feel like this is the right direction, because if they took those graphics and they just kind of adjusted it to where you held the controllers up and you shot with the trigger, and I feel like they could do that next step, and I hope they do. And then yesterday, your stream was really cool because you were showing off this custom bass jabber you built.
This little guy here, for those of you watching, you know, 1/144th scale bass jabber.
And you happen to have a Sharzaku on your desk. I mean, is that just your
main
one right now?
He doesn't, like.
Okay. Well, right now, I have something I'll show here in a second. It's not Shar. But the other cool thing is that you have a computer inside.
Yeah.
Which is amazing. And the idea is you could then access that computer in the cloud. And then you could make it where it has light controllers on it, potentially. You could even, if you wanted to, maybe even hook up a speaker and make it to where you could program sounds. Or, I mean,
dude, I mean, the possibilities are kind of endless, you know. I mean, and that's kind of the exciting thing about it, is that it's, you know, it's just something new and different. And, you know, it kind of goes back to the conversation that you had with Justin, where it's like some of the things that Gundam toys and Gundam products are missing are like play sets and interactivity, right? Yes. You know, if you think about like some of the sort of accessory type stuff, like, you know, bass jabbers, like what is the big mobile bass that Xeon had? The Dobde.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
The Dobde, something like that. That, imagine that wired up with like lights and sounds and stuff. Kind of like the Big Zam that they announced, right?
Right. Like, which is like the closest thing. Like,
yeah,
it's not a place set. But it is kind of in that direction because it's big. It has the lights.
But it's only one mobile armor, right? Like, yeah, it doesn't come with mobile suits to like interact with it. So I don't know. You know, I don't know if that necessarily qualifies. I think about a lot of the toys that like my daughter has. You know, obviously she's into like the Little People play sets and things like that. Like, she's got like a little Frozen set that came with like Elsa and Olaf and lights up and plays music and all that good stuff. I'm like, where's that stuff for Gundam? So, you know we got to make it. We got to make it ourselves.
Yeah, we have to. But okay, that reminds me of something. I don't know if our age ranges will, like, you'll remember this, but there was something that came out. I want to say it might have been my age range, or it was my brother, and then it was my kids, but it was a Fisher-Price castle that came with knights.
Oh.
And like the door would open and you could, does that sound familiar? And you could like be inside.
I didn't have one, but I saw them.
Okay. That thing, I remember, yeah, it was cross-generational in some fashion. I forget how it was, but I just remember they re-released it again later and it was updated a bit, but it had like all these different knights and they were articulated, and that was the coolest thing. Yeah, there's something about. And it's interesting because even though it was more cartoony, it was better than, for instance, during, I think it was the Solo film and maybe The Force Awakens, they came out with play sets, but they were like plastic and cardboard combined, and they just weren't. It's like, man, Fisher-Price is doing better with these play sets.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's one of the things that's like, and not to dog on it or get too far off topic, but like the Bluey play sets, like for those of you that have kids that are into Bluey right now, it's like same thing. It's like cardboard and like, You know, it's not as interactive as like a Fisher Price thing. But you know what would be kind of cool, and I think would be Gundam-y? Do you remember those Starship Troopers minifigures?
Oh yeah,
with like magnets in them.
I still have. I probably put them up. The arachnid.
Oh, yeah, and you could like put the soldiers in the arachnid's mouth, and it would hold them there.
I know. It was so funny too, because I was looking up, you know, now that I'm like deep into Godzilla, in the 90s, they came out with Godzilla heads that would open and would be play sets and have the little figures. And I was like, those are awesome. Just like the Star Wars, just like the Starship Troopers. They even made alien ones, if I'm not mistaken.
Wow.
Unless that was a dream I had. I randomly have dreams a lot about Batman, Alien, and Predator toys. But I looked it up on eBay and they're like $200 a piece.
Oh yeah.
And I was like, man, I would love to have those. Cause again, I like the form factor. They're small and you can do stuff with them, but
kind of like the Mighty Max type stuff.
Exactly.
Like, there was Mighty Max for boys and Polly Pocket for girls. Yep. And it was the
exactly.
Same.
Okay. Before we get into more Gundam stuff before we get more Gundam stuff. You know, I know, again, we didn't do a lot of banter last week or whatever, but like, so I have finished all of the Godzilla movies, 85 and up.
That's a lot of movies.
Like, it is. The 60s and 70s ones I'd watched when I was a kid, and I wasn't really interested in revisiting them, but it's interesting that I guess through the 80s and 90s, maybe because of distribution, I had never known of or watched 90s Godzilla films, and they are actually really good. And I then went through the Millennium. Some of those I knew, the 1999 and up, not the American 98 one, but the 99 and up, because when I worked at a movie theater, they were playing Godzilla 2000. And then I remember all the trailers for Final Wars, which is pretty interesting. And what I love about the Godzilla movies, for me, it's more of my filmmaking side coming out, because I love to see, okay, these things have small budgets. What are they doing? How are they doing it? Are they adding to the mythos at all? And I like how the Heisei era, which is the 90s, is one continuity. That's like, but where the first film from 54 is where it starts. And then it has this continuity. And then the Millennium films do the same thing, where the first movie is how it starts, but then each movie, except for two, are completely different stories. And there's these two movies that called Godzilla Against Mechagodzilla, and then Godzilla, oh my God, Tokyo SOS, they are sequels to each other.
Okay.
So what's interesting is, again, the creative process behind all the development. The Final Wars movie that came out, which is insane, is directed by this director that I can't say his name. It's really hard. But he's a director I'd always been into. He came out with this movie in Japan called Versus in the late 90s, and it was his take on Evil Dead.
Oh.
And it's in the forest, but there's samurai swords and deadites and stuff, and it's really good. And then it's crazy that, he makes this, you know, Godzilla film. But also, there's this other interesting Godzilla movie that came out in 2001 that uses different directors and kind of different special effects. Like, it's at one point, it's like what they do is Toho, as a production company, will get a director. And then the director will kind of pick, you know, who's doing stuff. And it's usually the same people, except for this 2001 movie. And what's interesting, like, here's the, and see, this is where my money's been going. Here's the 90s Heisei Godzilla. This is the SH Monster Arts. I really like this design. But what's really cool is the design of the 2001 version, because they make him look evil as F with wide eyes. They even were saying not to use wide eyes, because that's almost, that's like another way, it like mocks blind people in Japan.
Oh.
So they made the around it gray, but the idea was to make him as evil as possible. Now, what's interesting is I noticed the story's a little goofy at the beginning, and I was like, that's interesting. Why is this story goofy? And it's because the guy that directed it made a short film with Hideaki Anno in the 80s that was kind of like a Godzilla-esque film. And
that's
they show Anno in it. He's a guy with the film camera. So it's like, it's interesting to see that Hideaki Anno, who's involved in Gundam since Char's Counterattack, also has been involved with Godzilla, you know? And I like that kind of crossover of creatives, because a lot of times these creatives, there's this essence of storytelling that they're able to make sure gets expressed, you know? And what's interesting about this Godzilla from 2001 is that it's more of a Jason, like a slasher film, because it's the first movie where they actually are showing like Godzilla almost accidentally or not actively killing people. Like, and it's
just collateral damage.
Exactly. And, but because the idea of this Godzilla comes back as a vengeful spirit. And so anyway, I just found all that stuff, you know, interesting, because it then goes to, you know, when it comes to a Gundam live action movie, how come that didn't happen during this time? Because I felt like there was a lot of creatives, but it could be Sunrise thinking budget. And to be honest, when you watch these Godzilla movies, you are having to you sit through the cheese in the camp, as that has to be part of it in order to make the world.
A little bit of a suspension of disbelief. You know, it's not and you get the same thing with like Ultraman, you know, any of those oversized creature.
So, you know, that then the other flip side of that is what makes me go back to always thinking, wow, Sunrise, Bandai, whoever really is in charge, they really do respect the Gundam franchise. You know, I mean, yeah, sure, you see this SD stuff and that can be separate, but like when it comes to mainline Universal Century, like you could see they really do a good job. Even when that G Savior came out, I think it is good for the budget it had. Like, I mean, it's really hard for people. It reminds me of the Godzilla movies. It's really hard for people that take movies too seriously to like be able to enjoy themselves.
Yeah,
but they did a good job. They decided not to use the Gundam name for G Savior for that purpose, to kind of help ease people into it. So, you know, and then that makes me think even more how this live action Gundam movie is going to be good, because they're taking their time.
Yeah. And I mean, that's not to say that they disrespect Godzilla as a franchise. I think that there's just I wonder if it's just like a reverence for the medium. And I think you know, this was a topic on both of our shows at one point, where like the medium being the message, like, you know, it's one thing to take something from the 1950s and, you know, make a newer version of it in the same medium, because you're still just making a Godzilla film. But then to take an anime and make something live action, like, we've seen that go really well, and we've also seen it not go not so well. So when it comes to adaptations, I think that there's a certain level of care and consideration that goes into whether or not something Gundam would, you know, hold up. And they're like, and they're being very conservative and not just being cavalier and throwing out, like, doing whatever they want with it, right?
Yeah, because I guess with, you know, Godzilla, it was always about the suit action, like the being in a suit, filming that way. And that was the focus. So the suit action would get better, you know, as the movies would go. But then sometimes that would mean they would be over the top and goofy. But it was because it was about the suit action. And I think we've come to a time, and that's why, again, we're getting amazing Godzilla movies right now, and amazing, you know, I'm not talking about the Monsterverse, even though those are fine. I mean, like Shin Godzilla and Minus One. Juxtaposed with an anime series like Gundam now getting it, is because CGI is now at a level where you can mimic what animation does. You can mimic what suit motion does. In fact, from what I understand, even Godzilla Minus One, they did motion capture of someone in a suit. So I feel like that's kind of what it is. And I think you're right. It's about the medium. It's like right now we have, it's almost like AI. There's tools that can help you do it faster. CGI can help make it look like anime, you know, what you would want out of the anime to be believable. CGI can make it look like Godzilla's terrorizing without it being a cheesy guy in a suit, you know? And that's what I loved about these 90s and 2000s Godzillas, is when it, not all the time, but they tried to frame it and light it to make it look as believable as possible, And when they would build, you know, we build Gunpla. So when I would see in dioramas, when I would see the behind the scenes of them building cities, and then pretty like, cool. It's like, that is awesome. And then they're making it look like it reminds me when I'm doing the photography, making it look like it's the scale and the scope. Great stuff. So yeah, that's been what it took 3 or 4 weeks to watch all the movies. I would do like one every other day, I think it was. And then I would, and because of Black Friday sales, the Godzilla Blu-rays would come in 2 packs for $10 on Amazon. So it wasn't hard to slowly build that up. And then I ripped them all to my Gundam server. So I got a Godzilla server and a Gundam server for streaming my stuff. Nice. But yeah. Okay. So Godzilla talk out of the way. I was able to have it relate to Gundam.
No, absolutely. Anything
Gundam related you've been getting into recently?
Well, aside from the stuff I've been building, you know, not particularly, but yeah, on the topic of filmmaking though, I did watch, there's a movie on Netflix. I think it's Netflix right now. Carry On stars, Taron Egerton and Jason Bateman of all people.
Oh, I think I saw the trailer for that.
Yeah. So that was an interesting one. You know, my wife and I watched it late at night and, you know, it brought to mind one of the things that I hope does not come to the Gundam film, which is CGI action that is made to look unbelievable. And it's not a spoiler to say this, but there is a scene in the movie, because it's not a very heavy action movie. It's mostly suspense.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, the premise is very straightforward. It's like Taron Egerton plays a TSA agent. Jason Bateman plays a terrorist. He's trying to, like, coerce the TSA agent into letting a bomb on a plane. And, you know, has his girlfriend hostage, that sort of thing. It's, you know, typical action movie slop, right?
Yeah.
But there is a scene where there is a fight that occurs between a federal agent and someone that they're transporting in a car. And they do this very, like, you know, they're trying to be artsy with it, and I can appreciate that, but at the same time, like, knowing what goes into filmmaking, it kind of takes you out of the action, because they're in the car and they're kind of like, you know, someone's in the driver's seat, someone's in the passenger seat, they're fighting each other. And, you know, obviously the car is like in motion, it's swerving around and stuff, but there's no fixed camera. The camera is, it's all one shot, and it kind of rotates around inside the car, outside the car, inside the car. You know,
I think the Raid was known for that.
Yeah.
You know, the Raid films?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, you know, things that a real camera would never be able to do.
Right.
And to me, like, I understand that it's like, oh, it's like kinetic act, like it's kinetic filmmaking and it's very like action heavy, but like, I'm just like, this is all fake. There's nothing.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
To ground you in it. And so, yeah, we saw it too in like the Transformers movies. Like they have like a lot of like dolly type shots where you're seeing lots of mecha fighting each other, but it's like the camera angles are all completely unrealistic. Whereas even if it were still a single, like if you could still do it in one take, but if you had that fixed camera, then it feels like you're actually in the car with two people, as opposed to being like this ethereal God's eye view type thing.
I agree. And I think that's something that bothers me when I watch movies is when they have you, I think you explained it perfectly. It's these fake dollies that there's no way a camera would be moving like that. And I wonder if that is another thing, like the CGI animation of the faces in Requiem for Vengeance, is it something that's a learned behavior or thing? Like we grow up with cameras having to be realistic.
Mm-hmm.
So when we see something that doesn't move right, we're like, well, that's not real. Same with, you know, the facial animations. I wonder if we're going to see a time in the future where all camera angles are going to be just computer generated, you know, because it's almost like in the, like, man, I'm thinking crazy now. Cause what if you could have people on a set talking and there's like this little device that's just gets everything. And then you go into the editor and then you just choose where that camera would be at that time and how it moves.
Yeah. I mean, they already kind of do that with drone footage, right? Like,
yeah.
I mean, drone footage kind of looks like that, where it's like these very crazy looking angles and stuff. And you know, what's crazy is this, I'm going down a weird rabbit hole here.
Oh, no.
But like, there's that kids show Cocomelon. that has that same type of camera behavior. And so it's interesting that, like, if you're a parent that has your young kids watching Cocomelon, then they are already appreciating that kind of unrealistic camera expectation. And so then when they go to watch a movie like Transformers, like Carry On, it doesn't take them out of it. But for someone from our generation, it's like, this looks weird.
Yeah, that is very interesting. And I think it's the same thing with that motion smoothing on TVs.
Yeah. You know?
Which to me, that's why sometimes when people complain about a game needing to be 60 FPS or 120 FPS, like the Indiana Jones game that came out, there's an option to play it at 24 frames a second. That's or maybe cool. It was only 30. But I did that on purpose because I'm like, well, I want this to play like a movie. But then when I was playing the game, it was like, oh, this feels sluggish. So then I put it to 120 or whatever it was at. And I was like, oh, this feels better. But it's like, you know what? It's almost like, you know, wasn't even Peter Jackson utilizing that technology with one of the Hobbit films, making it high frame rate? I think it was 40 or something like that.
There's definitely a benefit to shooting things high frame rate if you're going to go back and do them in slow motion.
Oh, yeah, that's for sure. Yeah.
So, like, having the extra frames isn't necessarily a bad thing, but I think what's the max that an eye can process? Isn't it, like, 240?
I don't know. They change it every year. They even said we can't see above 1080p for the longest time. So that's why I find that very interesting. I think it's more of what you get used to, what you grow up seeing or experiencing, versus then what, you know, like, you know, with the UFO and drone stuff going on, you know, for some older people, it's fascinating. But for kids,
they're like, where's my Amazon package?
Yeah. You know, it's almost like this is just a part of society. So it's interesting how that's a part of filmmaking.
Well, and you mentioned it too, when it comes to like the VR headset stuff, like when you were playing Phantom, like you tended to get that kind of motion sickness, and but your kids don't, do they?
Yeah. So that's what's interesting. Like, I'll even see there was someone had a video up talking about, for your MetaQuest 3, you'll want the extended battery because it won't have enough time. And I'm like, well, for me personally, I will get sick before I'll run out of battery. But I know my son will play on his until the battery is done. And then like, oh, I need to charge it. And it's like, oh, wow, that's very fascinating. Like how, and it's, I think it's more me not being used to it. Just like my dad or even my wife to a point can't watch first person games. Mm. Like, especially when I'm playing and moving around real fast. And it's like, okay, that's too much, but I'm used to that. So I think a lot of, when it comes to frame rates in video games, when it comes to camera motions and filmmaking, like a lot of this stuff is just what you're used to seeing. And I don't think it means one is better or worse. It's just what the technology decides to do. Usually it's ease of creation.
Right.
Or something, or to pull off a technology that then evolved.
But that is something that I appreciated about Requiem for Vengeance. And you brought this up in all of your reviews of it, is, you know, the shots are very cinematic, and they did very deliberate camera angles. And it was funny because I think we mentioned on the show, it was like, it was almost to its detriment that some of the character angles were so cinematic, because it really highlighted how poor the facial animations were. It was like, man, if the facial animations were spot on, this shot would be perfect. But like,
yeah, it's interesting. I, you know, at the end of the day, I probably would have, as someone making this, that's where I would have cut corners, is on making someone seem as realistic as possible versus the animation of the mobile suits fighting. I think even today someone commented saying, I'm watching for the awesome mobile suit animation, so it doesn't matter. And I'm like, yeah, that's
the way to go into it.
It's just, if you're trying to get someone new into it, you know, that's where all this comes in, like with video games. You get people in the video games, but if it's first person, or, you know.
Yeah.
So moving on real quick, something I got from, a couple things. This one is something I got, I ordered from Japan, actually. It was an import of the Mobile Suit Ensemble. Nice. Mighty Strike Freedom. This thing is awesome. Again, it's like where the seed is, I'm engaging with it more. I feel like this is just an awesome design, and it has, you know, the katana. And I love the Mobile Suit Ensemble.
I was going to say, I think you talked about this last week, where sometimes you don't appreciate a thing until you have you put your hands on it. And I think, you know, with Requiem for Vengeance, like some of those designs at first, it was like, they're give or take. But like, I don't know, like now that you hold them.
And, you know, there's something about it, too. And actually, you know what? That reminds me. There's an interview that I'm going to make a video about of the designer of the Gundam EX.
Yeah.
And he was talking about, what was it, when he was designing stuff for Seed, he was kind of going all out. And they were like, no, let's make it look like UC. Like they purposely so it's like it was intentional to make Seed look like UC, which I found interesting. But what I'm going to do is actually, and this might be a live stream, I don't know. I did this with the Crossbone ensemble I have, but there are just a couple areas, not many, that aren't accurate, like paint-wise. So like vents, the gun, for instance, the gun's all white. I'm going to go through, and the beam saber. So I need to get like the clear pink or whatever to paint on. But I'm going to paint. I got this, and I guess I should talk about it, this paintbrush set that was actually sent to me, and they asked if I could at least make a video about it. So I'll be doing a video about it. And
what a legit case.
I know. It's really nice. And they provided a promo code, too, so I'll include a promo code. But I'll probably do a live stream where I'm painting this with that, and I'll include the link in the promo code. Because I was really at the point where I was needing new paintbrushes, because I was using some old ones for some painting I was doing recently, I think for the EX and the Zaku too. Another thing that I love is this another Freedom. It's the Master Grade SD Freedom clear color.
Yeah, again, the Gundam Base Limited one.
Gundam Base Limited. Again, I saw it at the Gundam Base. It was in a case, but it was built. And when I saw it in person, I was like, I want it because like I like the non-clear one. I think it looks cool, but for some reason, I didn't want to buy it. But when I saw the clear, even though I wouldn't normally get, so yeah, it's like Seed, it's SD, it's clear, all the stuff I wouldn't care for. But this thing was fun to build. It's awesome, fully articulated. I'll be doing a review on this. I still have to add the decals to it. That's, you know, one final step. But I'm totally digging it. Any Seed kits you've built? Other than what Xionic Shadow has sent.
Oh, so actually, Xionic Shadow didn't send me the Seed Freedom ones. He sent me something different, but...
Oh, what was it?
Ultronimus. I still need to do a sponsored stream for Ultronimus because he sent me the Real Grade Justice Gundam, which, for those of you who don't know, that's probably like the one Seed suit that I'm like, I love the Justice. I love the pink color. I know that, Adam, you're... You object to pinks and purples, but
it depends.
Yeah, I mean that 21st century type, like the real world color of the Justice, that's like the blue kind of like cyan colored one. That one's pretty cool too. But I like the regular Justice Gundam, so I still need to build that. But I've heard that that's one of like, you know, before some of the later kits came out, like the new Gundam and the Sinanju, that was one of like the best real grades to get. So,
And so I don't know what this means. Will I be getting other Freedom kits? I mean, I have built a couple Seed kits before. I remember when I first got into Gunpla, I built I forget what it was called, but it was, I gave it to Robert because Robert wanted one, but he can't build it. So I built it and sent it to him. I don't know if it was the Strike or what it was, but I want to say then there was whatever that main grunt suit is that has, it looks like almost like a GM, but it has like the flight pack.
Oh, the Wyndham.
Yes. Yeah. I built one of those because that looks badass.
Dude, that's like, I love Seed grunt suits because they're basically like Gundams. Like they're UC Gundams. Design. It's like if you took UC Gundams, those are the grunt suits from Seed, and then the Seed Gundams are like taking it a step further.
Yeah. No, that's actually a really good way to put it. The other one is that Murasame Kai, if that's how it's pronounced. I still need to get that. And I saw it and didn't grab it. Hey, Talos, good to see you. Yeah, we just happen to be doing it at a time where he can join in because, you know, he's in Greece. So, yeah, we'll see in the future where I go with, getting, the different ones. Because the other thing, too, is the backlog. You know, it's like I had just started the Master Grade GM that I got from Art Revo Gundam. And I got that, and then I got the Mobile Suit Ensemble Strike, and then I got this, or Freedom. And I was like, man, I want to just build these. And so, you know, sometimes it's like, okay, well, what am I going to build next? You know, is there anything right now that you're building or plan to build out of your backlog?
So I'm still in the process of building the Origin Desert Zaku and the Surface Type from Kukuru's Doyan's Island. But I do have to hold off on finishing those because it's like, you know, I've got the V8 that I'm still doing custom work on. Speaking of Xeonic Shadow, I actually owe him a kit because from Zeke New York, we have the pre-production Gundam Ilfrith, which I'm going crazy with this one because inspired by the HGEX videos that you've seen on YouTube where people have wired up some RGB lights into the chest unit of like the Calibarn. I'm doing the same thing with the Ilfrith. I'm actually going to be potting it in resin, and that way, you know, I don't know if anybody's interested, I can make them one and it'll just be like a part that you can snap onto the existing
parts that are like on the chest that light up.
Exactly.
So you're basically going to make your own that can contain the LEDs.
Exactly. So it's like the same thing that you would get from like a Cosmos LED set, but I don't even think that the Cosmos one does that. I think they did it for the full mechanics, but they didn't do one for the high grades. Yeah.
You know, that's interesting because it makes me think how much LEDs would benefit by having LEDs in it. And it's interesting because I found for just $10, and I guess this was in the show and I forgot, but it has like Wings of Light. Maybe that's what it's called that comes off of it. But yeah, I might need to look at some of your LED videos and figure out something maybe I can do with this. I mean, they make the head big enough to do something with it.
That's the beauty of SD kits, right? Is like there's plenty of room to stuff parts and, you know, batteries and things in there.
Yeah. Interesting. Because, yeah, the most I had done with LEDs is when I think I built 5 high-grade GMs and made it where they had the LEDs. Because my idea was to have a diorama where it's like RX-78-2 in the front, the GMs in the back with the LEDs turned on. You know, how many projects do we start and then never finish? And what is it about a project that makes us finish it?
You know what? I think that having deadlines helps. And that's one of the things, like, not you know, it's a little early to go into New Year's resolutions, but one of my new resolutions next year is going to be to finish one project per month, like finish it, start to finish. Because, you know, I think back to this year I did that Hobbytown model contest where I did the Bawu. That I built it, you know, wired up the LEDs in it and did some weathering on it and the decals and everything. That I did start to finish in a month, and it's because I knew it had to be done drop dead date July. And I didn't quite finish it. I only got it, you know, halfway done because I ran out of time to wire up the LEDs for the left hand beam saber. So I only did the right hand, but it has like the magnetic hard points. It's got the little glemmy that sits on the shoulder that I 3D printed, all that good stuff. The eyes light up. It still transforms. But yeah, you know, so many of my projects, whether it's the Core Zeta Gundam, whether it's the V8, whether it's the Ilfrith, you know, I get a little bit into it, but then I'm like, well, I don't have like a hard deadline to finish it by. So
that's a good point. I've realized for me, it's when it's something that I think would be a fun video to make, because when when I started building this, what kept me going was, oh, I cannot wait to film, you know, where I'm a camera and I'm like moving it around saying, oh, this does this, this does that. Like, so I can see, yeah, having a deadline for a purpose or a reason. Yeah. So I think having a video to make, like for instance, I want to do a video walking through this, but I actually feel like, well, I got, you know, the paint brushes. So I'm going to do a video where it's like how I'm going to detail, you know, a mobile suit ensemble to be accurate. That way it's, I'm satisfying, you know, they wanted me to make a video with the paintbrushes, but then also show people how badass this little mobile suit ensemble is and how someone could detail it if they wanted it to look accurate, which is not too much. It's really just, you know, white or red here or there on it, but it's kind of fun to do. Anyway.
I think you need to do like a whole series where it's instead of ver anime, it's like ver ADAM. Like
that's actually a good idea because I have criteria. It's
yes.
How does it show up in its origin of use? So like for the Gundam EX, I mean, I noticed other bigger YouTubers that built the high grade Gundam EX didn't detail it accurately. Not that they need to, but I almost feel like, you know, at least what I'm saying is that's like this, what separates what I like to do with mine. It's like, it reminds me when I would collect the Star Wars action figures, they'd come out with one. I'm like, well, that's not completely accurate to the movie. And so then I would try to make it. And it's like, okay. And so that's what I like to do with the Gundam. Sometimes what I will do too is go a little far. If it's like, okay, I want to make it accurate with maybe some decals in, you know, the color where it would be. Maybe I'll add more decals, just a little more. Or maybe I'll add some chrome in some areas that it would be realistic that something would have chrome or gold. Do you have any future video plans for any of your projects?
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously, I've got Core Zeta Gundam footage that I still have to edit. And then I actually, my Gundam EX, did a whole tutorial video on using the Silanot remeltable mold compound. I filmed the entire process. The only thing that's left to do is finish the LEDs that are going into the replacement head, because I think I've probably made it clear that the one thing that kills me about this kit is the head.
It's interesting. That is interesting.
But I think I solved that problem, and hopefully you guys agree with it.
So that's two videos you have in the making.
Yeah. So, yeah, hold me to it. Nag me about them.
Is that two or is that three? The V8? Oh, no, that's the one you were talking about, the V8?
Yeah.
Okay. No, that's awesome. And I guess that's a way to get it done when you need to, it's like, what project? Oh, I've already filmed. I might as well.
Yeah, it's like I got to...
Man. And so, you know what, that might be a good suggestion. Like, let's say you're not a YouTuber or content creator, but you like to share your stuff on social media. Maybe that's the way to do it, where like every weekend or at least every month, have one of your projects done so you could post pictures about them online. Because,
hey, I mean, shout out to the shirt lad, you know, mutual friend of ours. He almost exactly 1 year ago started drawing once a day. Like he was like,
I start
drawing again. I was like, draw once a day, like do one drawing per day. And he started doing it and he's held up, you know, his side of the bargain. He also goes like, you know, he'll do everything from like traditional cartoon characters, like a Donald Duck to then like Gundam stuff to, you know, sometimes other anime. And, you know, it's been awesome just seeing that progression. And so again, you know, like you said, if you're not a content creator, maybe you're not really interested in like producing content out of these things, but just documenting them and sharing them allows everyone, including yourself, to track your progress as you get better and better at the thing.
Yeah. I think that's a really good tip for those that don't, you know, aren't content creators necessarily. That reminds me, there was a time maybe 10 years ago or more, there was this friend of mine that, you know, we would always draw all the time. And, because he worked at the company I was at, and we had this thing, a Viking a day, and we would just randomly draw Vikings every day. I don't know. It was just kind of fun just because of there's the human component to it, but then so much that could be added on, whether that's weapons, hair, horns, even though technically Vikings supposedly didn't have horns,
Really?
Yeah. That was a earlier, I guess, not tribe, but an earlier population that then people would, or historians would then combine them, but they were separate groups.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, I wonder how often that happens where like things get conflated like that.
I think all the time. I've learned that too, just researching more and more history, or when more things are found where it's like, oh no, this wasn't part of that group, but they lived there, or, you know, some other thing where we get a snapshot of like, I don't know, 200 years and we just assume it was all the same, or even 1,000 years or 10,000 years. Like I was doing some history research on Japan and, you know, the periods they went through, like Jomon period that moved the Yayoi period, I think it was called. But like the Jomon period encompasses like 13,000 years ago. So it's like
they have to have gotten some stuff wrong. Like,
right. Whereas this more closer date, this more closer period only encompasses like maybe a few hundred years. And it's like, well, if you can really select, you know, section off times by that small of a time scale on this, that makes me think there's more to it potentially. Or
I mean, dude, even within decades, like, you know, if people are going to continue to call these Transformers, then
exactly in the future it was like the year of transforming robot, or the century transforming robots, and they show like the Gundam and all that. Hey, which by the way, speaking of history, great, I'm going to do a video on this, but there is that G Savior sequel called
Audio
G Oblivion.
Oh,
yeah. It was like a manga or a short or something.
Yeah.
But in the story, they get a headless Gundam, and it's the RX-78-2, and its arm is like a repaired arm. Oh, and even the gun is only part of the gun, and it's repaired. And it's like, oh, they recovered it and tried to repair it. And I was like, that's an interesting idea, you know.
That's awesome. What's fascinating is it's like, you know, if say 100 years go by, would you assume that it did have a head, or would you be like, well, the cockpit's in the chest, so I guess it's just that's what it was supposed to look like?
Yeah, I know, that's very interesting to think, especially when you have mobile armors and all the other things, you know. And while I'd love to research this more, I do think there was a period between late UC and when we get to G Savior where a lot of the Earth went into sort of this like dark ages. You know, we talk about that a lot. So I wonder how much history was possibly lost.
Oh, yeah. I mean, even if you think about like, you know, Turn A Gundam, like, I mean, civilization basically reset, right? It's like,
yeah, I really like that type of stuff. That's very interesting. So I want to get into something else real quick, because this is the last episode, I guess, before Christmas.
Yeah.
Since you've been into Gundam way longer than me, were there times on Christmas you got Gundam related stuff when you were younger?
Yeah. I mean, when I was a teenager, like my dad would get me like a model kit.
Cool.
Typically like 100 scale, you know, something from Gundam Wing. So like, for instance, I think, man, I'm trying to think of like, cause I know that the first two that I got were the Ultron and the Tall Geese 3. I think that the first one I got on Christmas was a Death Scythe Hell.
Oh,
and it would have been the Endless Waltz one, because at the time that was the only one that was here.
Oh, okay, interesting. Yeah, because I, you know, the only time I got Gundam stuff on Christmas has just been, you know, recently, where,
yeah,
you know, like I think my dad bought me a Gundam shirt because, oh, you're now into that, and then you know, because it was funny when I was younger, there was a period of time, I forget when it was, where my parents were like, on Christmas, like, okay, you can't ask for toys anymore. And I want to say I was probably 12 or 13, you know, and they were, and so I think it was then I was asking for video games. And then I think it got to where they were like, okay, you can ask for toys now, you know, but and that's cool. Yeah. My parents were good about, you know, getting me, you know, a thing that I was into. I'm trying to think. I remember getting like Sonic and Knuckles, you know, on Christmas, a Sonic plushie. Yeah, I remember when the Spawn figures came out, I got Medieval Spawn.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, because that it was cool. I never read the Spawn comics, but I just like Spawn. I probably had him on a card or something, you know. It's funny. I would always get the I forget what it was called. It was the comic magazines.
Yes.
But I never bought comics. Yeah, probably like Wizard. But I wouldn't buy comics. I mean, if we went to a convention, yeah, they're like cheap and I'd get a whole bunch. But I was never like a consistent, like, okay, it's just, it's interesting then. Spawn was still known to be cool. The toys at the time were amazing. I remember when those were coming out, like, what the heck? How good they looked.
And again, that's like before you had these kind of like big budget movies behind that stuff. So it's really fascinating to me that, you know, even then something with that had such kind of like a niche fan appeal as comic books, especially something like Spawn, you know, we're not talking about like Captain America and Spider-Man and stuff like that. We're talking about like
something, it is interesting,
super offbeat, was getting like awesome action figures.
Well, even Blade, to think about Blade being the big movie that then had toys, Spawn being a movie, and then there was, you know, the toys. It's interesting that it really took Spider-Man. I mean, Batman, but Batman was also dark. You know, it's very interesting how the whole point in the 80s was commercializing these properties to make toys off of.
Yeah. Why did they have RoboCop toys? Like, kids should not have been watching RoboCop.
And so I think that almost goes back to, at the end of the day, which I feel is interesting. It's not that toys or the stuff are for kids. Just people assume because you're holding an item that's a representation of something that's childlike and that's for kids, you know. Because, yeah, if we look at the stuff that ends up being successful, you know, Batman 1989, you know, that was a darker Batman, even though kids could watch it. But the merchandise, you know, sold crazy. And then even Blade, Spawned highly detailed action figures that didn't exist before. Right. So it is very interesting to look at the psychology of the action figures and the IPs they come from. And that it's, I don't think it's a kid thing. I think it's what's very unique about humans is our imagination. That's something that is not, we can't share imagination with other beings on this earth. You know, no. We can't go to a dog and be like, hey, let's go pretend we're hunting. For the dog, they are really hunting.
Yeah.
You know, and you have to train them. But for humans, it's like, oh, I want to go outside. Oh, I'm an airplane. And I'm, you know, but as we get older, and I've felt this when I would still collect action figures, you know, when I was a teenager, is I would play with them less because it wasn't as believable of a pastime for me. I couldn't lose myself in the imagination of playing with my toys because I've gone beyond that. Now it's like, okay, well, let me get my camera and film, you know, I would build cities out of cardboard and then get my camera, the family home video camera, and like film panning shots of like, so there's something about this expressing imagination that, yeah, it's not about being a kid. And that's why I think you can look to adults or people with the income to support that hobby, just like we're seeing Target getting all the collectibles. Even as someone in my 40s, I see people that buy things that I could never. It's like there's people that buy those giant $1,000 statues and they have tons of statues. And it's like,
yeah,
it's wild. I mean,
some of those licensed Lego sets are pretty insane.
Good point.
But yeah, I mean, and even just on the topic of Gundam, it's like, clearly, it was the older, you know, college age and up fans of the series that kept it alive, is because, you know, the toy sales didn't do well, but that's because the toys never really reflected what was going on in the anime. Yeah. Whereas the model kits, it was like, we need to get these as accurate to the anime as possible. And it's like, if that means that we have to sell them as white plastic and you paint them, then that's what we're going to do. Whereas, you know, when you look at that, I love that traditional toy where like the Gundam's all chromed out and it has like some model number on the chest and it has like a spear and a shield.
Oh yeah.
Like it never had those things in the show. So as an adult collector, it's like, well, I'm not going to buy that. But like,
and you've brought that up in terms of video games too. Like when there's video games maybe made for kids, it's sometimes like, well, this isn't really respecting the time of the child. This is just an adult assuming a child would want this. And I think that's like what George Lucas messed up on, where he made Star Wars for kids too, and essentially more of just like this general adventure for everybody. Mm-hmm. But then he doubled down on that for like Ewoks or Jar Jar. And it's like, well, that's
the Phantom Menace. Like the Phantom Menace is essentially a kid's movie, which, you know, I'm not saying that as a derogatory. It's like, I still enjoy that film, but like, and heck, I mean, look at Tomino with Victory Gundam. He was like, okay, I want to try and do kind of like the same thing I did with Zeta Gundam, but we're going to do it with a kid because like, I'm trying to appeal to those kids. And it's like,
yeah, but then it's like, yeah, that is interesting because I think if you just tap into what makes you most excited to talk about and be creative about, you're automatically going to get people of all ages interested in what you're doing. You know, and I think if then you're trying, so like when Tim Burton made Batman 89, he wasn't trying to make an adult Batman. He was trying to make a Batman that's dark because it's a Batman, you know, and everyone liked that. And like, I think
it should be scary.
Yeah. And that's the same thing with Blade. Not that kids should be watching Blade, but it's like when you're a kid and watching Freddy Krueger or Jason, you want to watch a horror movie. Blade's almost that, but a badass. It's scary because there's vampires, but then he has a sword and he's like effing them up. And that's like badass, you know?
Well, I think, you know, psychologically, kids want to see something that they can grow up and aspire to be. Like, kids don't want to watch other kids do stuff. They want to watch the adult that they want to be. Like, oh, I'm going to grow up and be Aragorn. I'm going to grow up and have a sword and stuff. Whereas adults tend to like, we tend to get nostalgic about things. Is we like to watch movies and TV shows that like remind us of where we were at that age.
Yeah.
Because we know that those days are behind us. Like, no, I'm never going to be a Gundam pilot. Like, I'm just too old.
Yeah.
I've aged out of it. I don't have any more eligibility. But yeah, I enjoy seeing those stories about like the teen awkwardness and stuff because it's like, man,
then that new Star Wars Skeleton Crew has been out. Mm-hmm. I actually haven't watched it. It's the first Star Wars show that I canceled Disney Plus and I haven't been.
Look back.
It's interesting because it could be good. But the other reason why I wasn't crazy about watching it is because it's about kids, you know, it's going to what you're saying. It's like, I think Disney thought, oh, let's then make these movies or make a series like these old movies. But for me, for Star Wars, I want to get into the science of living in that world and the weapons they use to try to fend off whatever opposing force comes at them, you know?
And I mean, ironically, it's like, I don't even think Skeleton Crew is designed to appeal to kids. It's designed to appeal to people that are our age that are like, oh, I loved the Goonies. Like,
exactly. Which for me, I didn't care for Goonies. I didn't care other than E.T. because of the alien. Honestly, that was a sad movie. I remember when I cried when I first watched it
How can you kill the freaking alien?
Yeah. It's interesting. Yeah, I've never been into stories about kids, even when I was a kid. And I think it's interesting. Like, even growing up, people would talk about Goonies, but not anywhere near they talk about Back to the Future.
Yeah, because like, you want to be a teenager, like teenager and up. That way you can have the adventures.
Exactly.
It's worth noting, like, who had Goonies toys? I know I didn't. Like, you know, we had G.I. Joes and Transformers. Like, that was it.
Wasn't there a scene in Goonies where the guy had, like, the James Bond theme on his recorder and he'd go down the... Does that sound familiar?
Oh, yeah. That was, Data? They called him Data because he, like, had all the gadgets and stuff.
I remember that because, to me, that is cool. Like, because James Bond theme, he was trying to be the adult, be cool, you know? And, yeah, that part stuck with me, but that's about it. But,
mm-hmm.
But anyway, no, I think that just about does it. Thanks all for joining. Sorry we were both early and late at the same time.
Somehow we managed to
be early. But this was a lot of fun. I'll report back on Sonic 3, everybody. Let you know. It's probably good.
They're batting 100 right now. So it's like,
yeah, I know. So, all right, all. Have a good weekend and Christmas. And then we'll let you guys know what's going to happen with your channel, right? Midnight Hatter?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, have a good one. We'll see you later.